everyone. My name is Reese Karlinski, and this is Young History, episode 164 on Argentina. The capital of this country is Buenos Aires. The name Terra Argentina was given during the Age of Discovery, which means land of silver, and was adapted to Argentina to be the permanent name of the country. Now I'm going to give you guys some facts. The history of the Inca is acknowledged on the Argentinian flag with the Incan sun god Inti that adorns the centerpiece of the flag to this very day. Los Argentinos descendimos de los barcos is a saying in Argentina that means Argentinians are descendants of the boats. This highlights the deep connection to immigration with the population of Argentina, because half of the population is either an immigrant or descendant of one. Another fact is that the beautiful and romantic dance of tango was born in Argentina, and is now performed competitively around the world. The Argentinian city of Ushuaia is the southernmost city in the world. The city is also the southernmost city on the Pan American Highway, which is the longest highway in the world. Since 2013, November 8th has been celebrated as the National Day of Afro-Argentines and African Culture. This date was chosen to commemorate the recorded date for the death of Maria Lemedos de Valle, who was a Rabona, or guerrilla fighter, who served with the Army of the North in the War of Independence. On top of this, Argentina is the number one consumer of beef and other bovine products in the world. The average Argentinian consumes 103 pounds of beef and other bovine meats per year. So with all that, that gets us to our start, where I just want to get right into this history. A lot of stuff to sort through, because this is a unique history, and it stands out even because of its, you know, ethnic makeup and different things like that in South America. And it's very unique, so I'm going to do my best to do it justice, and I hope you guys enjoy. So, with that being said, my name is Reese Karlinski, this is Young History, and this is Argentina. Our origins begin in the Paleolithic period, when the first people likely arrived. The earliest evidence we have of the people here is the outlines of hands on caves that were created by blowing pigment through a pipe. Some of the earliest groups were the Huarpe, which were agrarian in their culture, and the Toba, who were traditional hunter-gatherers. The Diaguita were one of the first in the continent to figure out irrigation systems. Eventually, the Mapuche, who also inhabited southern Chile, established many civilizations in the Patagonian region and came to dominate it. I'm going to make a jump in the history now because there's very little writing to cover the early history of the country, so we're going to jump to around the late 1400s. This is because Mapuche people moved to avoid the expansion of the Inca. They migrated into the southern Patagonian areas and established permanent settlements there. The large migration of the Mapuche made it hard for us to find information on the other indigenous groups that lived in the region. Spanish explorers and conquistadors had set up the Viceroy of Peru with centralized power in its capital, Lima. This allowed for greater influence across the continent of South America. Exploration across the borders of the continent became a much more common feat, and this is when rumors started to appear. The rumors said that somewhere in the continent there were vast amounts of silver. Explorers and conquistadors circumnavigated much of South America as they hoped to find said silver. In 1516, Joao Diaz de Solis sailed to the Rio de la Plata for the Spanish crown and discovered silver veins. In the 1520s, Giovanni Cabot, who was a famous Italian explorer that sailed for Britain in its early years and Spain in his later, named the land Terra Argentina, or Land of Silver. He did this based on the pure confidence that there would be a vast amount of silver in this land. His son, Sebastian Caboto, actually sailed much of the Rio de la Plata and gave it that name. This pretty much meant River Plate, and he named it this because plate was heavily associated with silver in Spain at this time. Sentís Espiritual was established as the first Spanish settlement in Argentina in 1527. The expansion of the Spaniards upset local people groups who formed a short alliance to launch the invasions upon the settlement and destroy it. Famous Portuguese explorer Ferdinand Magellan sailed to the southern tip of South America and gave it to the Spanish crown. He named the region Patagonia after the Patagons, which were an indigenous group rumored to be giants. The rumor of their height is clearly falsified, but the name stuck nonetheless. In the mid-1500s, the government of the Rio de la Plata was formed to act as a subsidiary to the Viceroy of Peru. However, the governments of the Spanish crown limited any international trade to the Spanish New World unless it went through Lima. Nonetheless, vast amounts of trade happened in the Rio de la Plata despite it being illegal. The trade continued to happen across the Rio de la Plata, with its hearth being Buenos Aires. Continued expansion of Spanish influence caused more clashes with the native people groups. These groups continuously attacked Buenos Aires, and especially attacked smaller settlements. Nonetheless, trade continued to happen in the region, and so did the growth of the economy. The success of trade caused huge increases in the immigration throughout the 1600s. By the end of the 1600s, Buenos Aires had become an extremely important trade hub that wanted separate status from the Viceroy of Peru. The Bourbon reforms, which were enacted later on in the 1770s by the Bourbon Kings of Spain, created the Viceroy of the Rio de la Plata so it could be governed separately from other colonies. Spanish influence also introduced sheep, cows, and horses. And then I'm going to bounce back to when a certain city was established. Specifically, in 1580, Buenos Aires was. Buenos Aires means fair winds, which was named for the good winds that would bring trade to the city. The expansion of Buenos Aires and Argentina overall was done largely because of Spanish slavery. Over 200,000 enslaved people were brought into the city and the greater region. Descendants of the people brought here through the slave trade would go on to be a huge part of the Argentinian population. Black people were at one point one-third of Argentina's population. Despite the lucrative opportunities in the silver industry, exports were limited to certain Spanish cities, which made it hard for Buenos Aires to get in on the industry. This caused citizens of Buenos Aires to look for a new way to strengthen their economy. They found it in the Pampas region. This region is one of the largest animal grazing lands in the entire world. As Spanish expansion continued, it became very clear that thousands of cattle could be moved here to reproduce in these grazing lands due to the high amount of nutrients. Settlers realized how important this region could be, so the agricultural industry was created and took off very quickly. The expansion of this industry and Spanish claims on the Pampas region strained relations with the Mapuche even more than before. The Falkland Islands were claimed to be discovered by English explorer John Davis in 1592. However, the fact that these islands were uninhabited made them easy pickings for anyone. Every single other naval European power also claimed to have discovered the Falkland Islands. Around the 1770s, during the time of the Bourbon reforms, both France and Britain claimed the eastern and western halves of the Falkland Islands. Both of them didn't know the other half was being claimed. However, in this decade, Spain negotiated with France to purchase the islands. Once the purchase went through, Britain was expelled from the islands despite their claims still being recognized. However, once the American Revolution began, Britain left the islands to consolidate its forces into North America. Then, the Peninsular Wars began as Napoleon marched his way towards Spain. Once this happened, Spain left the islands. The Falklands continued to lack a permanent population, but there was now common visits from fishermen who used the islands as a temporary base of operations. But let's circle back. Napoleon and his war became extremely important in Argentina very quickly. Once Napoleon put pressure on the Spanish king, many Spanish forces in the New World were called back to defend the kingdom. This happened in Buenos Aires as well. The British saw this as an opportunity and hoped they could sail into the Pampas region and claim it for themselves. However, the lack of Spanish forces did not mean a lack of resistance. Britain would not have an easy time, so a full-scale invasion had to occur. The British invasion saw ones that simply consider themselves more closely tied to Buenos Aires and Argentina itself, felt a desire to fight against the British. The invasion brought a strong unity among the people that became the Argentinians. Everyone saw Britain as an enemy and united against that threat. A national identity was born, and it would never die. The May Revolution occurred and gave birth to the United Provinces of the Rio de la Plata. Every province, no matter who it was controlled by, unofficially united into one political unit to set the fight. Every province, no matter who it was controlled by, unofficially united into a political unit set to fight the British. The success of this unity gained Argentina the reputation as the birthplace of independence for South America. Argentina was one of the first places to declare independence from Spain. The Declaration of Independence was signed on July 9, 1816. It was ratified by the United Provinces of South America. However, the issue they faced was how the new South America would be governed once they officially ended Spanish rule. On May 25th, the viceroy was ousted and replaced with the first junta, which was a board of 8 members meant to politically serve King Fernandez VII. The junta had issues finishing the move for independence because in order to become independent, they had to claim all of the viceroy of La Plata. This included the now sovereign nations of Paraguay, Uruguay, and Bolivia, or at least a people within them who wanted to be sovereign nations. The members of those three nations did not see a valid reason why they should give up Spanish rule for Argentinian rule, so this prolonged the war for independence. However, it would be in 1818 that José de San Martín, The commander of Argentina charged his forces into the Battle of Maipú. He battled the Peruvian loyalist groups to a standstill near Santiago de Chile. With this, he was able to subdue their resistance and gain more separatist support. And the independence of Argentina would be confirmed, and then there would be a roll towards everywhere else in South America doing the same. The Cisplatine War was fought against Brazil between 1825 and 1828. This was fought over the Cisplatine region of Brazil, which the empire controlled at the time. Uruguayans wanted it for themselves so it could be the borders of their independent country. Argentinians supported their fellow member of the Rio de la Plata Union. The war was fought from 1825 to 1828 and resulted in the independence of the Cisplatine region as the Republic of Oriental Uruguay. And don't get on me for using that term, that is the actual title of what this was because of the different indigenous groups that formed this part of Uruguay. If you want more information on that, look back on my episode on Uruguay, which I did probably 6 months ago. Nonetheless, internally, Argentina faced a lot of issues on how the nation should be governed now that it was independent. Buenos Aires had a strong central government with a trade system similar to the one set with the Viceroy. This system had the central government benefit the most from trade. The Unitary Party supported the system. However, this was opposed by the other provinces. The Federalist Party and the Gauchos of the Pampas region also opposed it. Gauchos were very prominent ranchers and sometimes warmongers that controlled the Pampas region because of how important the beef and bovine industry was. They all wanted a more individual confederacy of smaller states to oppose the Unitary Party. The Gauchos rose to become the first caudillos of the land, which were pretty much warlords based on the land they had control over. The reason the Gauchos were so powerful was because they practically held the entire beef industry in their hands, so they could easily crash the Argentinian economy if they didn't get what they wanted. Instead, they used the size and strength of the beef industry to fund a small army and the purchase of many weapons. And then we see the rise of Juan Manuel de Rosas. He was a Gaucho turned soldier, and he received a lot of Gaucho support to become the most prominent caudillo in the region. He used his vast influence to fly up through the government and establish himself as a de facto leader. He became the governor of Buenos Aires in 1835. He would hold this position for nearly 20 years and dominate politics in that time. He gained early popularity because he launched campaigns in Patagonia to expand the land for the Gauchos. He also launched expansion campaigns against Bolivia and Peru, who sought to challenge Argentina. He continued to become popular among the caudillos because continued war campaigns required horses, food, and many other resources produced by the Gauchos. The campaigns actually created the common diet of Argentina, which was heavily based on different farmed meats. The national dish, asado, came from the campaign grounds where the Gauchos and soldiers would cook beef, pork, chicken, and more over an open fire, and they ended up making a full tradition out of it. Rosas was the perfect representation of what a caudillo would look like. They were prominent across South America and parts of Central America. He was a true military strongman that was willing to take power in the government in order to enact strong governance. Rosas helped establish Buenos Aires as the center of Argentina and central point of the government. La Mazorca was a secret police arm of the government established by Rosas. This unit acted as the secret defense front for Rosas. La Mazorca hunted down, executed, and exiled anybody they saw as a threat to Rosas. Rosas himself also had a list of enemies internally and abroad, which marked leaders in Paraguay and Brazil as the opposition to Argentinian success. All of the strong-arming done by Rosas actually turned people against him. He began to take too much power in the country, and it became clear that he was more of a dictator than a thoughtful leader. So, he was ousted in 1852. Justo José de Urguiza was the man who pushed Rosas out of power. He was a competitive caudillo who sought to use his leadership for the betterment of Argentina. It would be in this year that the Constitution of Argentina would be drafted and ratified. The Constitution on paper guaranteed the rights of free speech, private property, and more to its people. And it set the standard for the government to have separation of powers, checks and balances, and other limitations. The Constitution also encouraged the Argentinian government to allow European immigration into the nation for the sake of advancing society. This becomes extremely important. Bartolomé Mitre became president after this, and he became a clear representation of the Unity Party having success. All of this began the liberal oligarchy period, which lasted from 1852 until 1916. Despite the title, this period was actually very undemocratic because of extremely corrupt elections that seemed to be swayed by money or individual interests instead of a clean process. The stability of the government encouraged economic growth because of the large agricultural sector in Argentina. The new economic success allowed the nation to delve into the industrialization The new economic success allowed the nation to delve into industrialization and advancements of public works. Many public works projects and industrialization efforts took place in the early 1900s. With this large and continued boom in the economy, the system fed itself. The success of the economy funded the technological advancements of the agricultural industry and the mechanization of Argentina, which would lead to more economic growth itself. The success from all this also led to Buenos Aires being beautified, industrialized, and restructured. Buenos Aires became one of the busiest ports in the world, and the city itself started to be as beautiful as any European capital city. And now, quick side note because something random happened. Antoine de Tounen was a French lawyer that made his way into the Patagonian region of Argentina in the 1860s. Because of the fact that there was no official government in this Mapuche-controlled region, Tounen was able to create alliances with his negotiating skills that formed into its own kingdom. This was the kingdom of Aransania and Patagonia. But it wasn't legitimate. This man had no power, had no authority, and came into the land owned by other people and just kind of claimed it as his own kingdom. After just 2 years of odd claims over the land and no actual authority, Tounen was arrested by Chilean forces and deemed insane, and the kingdom was disbanded despite it never really existing. But in a much more serious note, from 1864 to 1870, there was the War of the Triple Alliance. Brazil, Argentina, and Uruguay formed an alliance against Paraguay over border disputes with the nation. Paraguay claimed a bunch of lands that would have affected the economy of Uruguay, Brazil, and Argentina. It became the deadliest war in the history of the South American continent. And the result was Paraguay getting flattened. It lost a lot of land despite making advancements on Bolivia and taking this region from Bolivia that is today the northwestern part of Paraguay. I go really deep on that on the episode of Paraguay, which you should check out. But crushes Paraguay and sends their economy into a spiral that they don't ever really recover from. Nor do most of the relations in the area recover from this. But for Argentina, the next thing to happen was the conquest of the desert. Argentina wanted to expand its influence across all of Patagonia. So they did with their earliest invasions. During the conquest, 1,000 Mapuche were killed and over 15,000 were displaced. The abuse that was thrust upon the Mapuche is some of the worst that happens across South America at this time, and many consider this an act of terrorism and a lot of torture done by the Argentinian forces. The commander of this effort was Julio Roca. After the area was successfully conquered, the government encouraged the settlement of European immigrants into the area so that it could be developed into an agricultural powerhouse. This plan succeeded, and Patagonia became a valuable resource center for Argentina. All of the success in both industrialization and expansion allowed for Argentina to open itself up as a free market economy. This encouraged investment from the U.S. and other European powers, which in turn encouraged vast amounts of immigration into Argentina. A significant majority of the immigrant population came from Southern Europe. These immigrants flooded into the working class population and caused it to be one of the largest in the Western Hemisphere. By 1914, Argentina was nearly 8 million strong. Half of this new 8 million strong population was immigrants, and half of the immigrants were Italian. The other half was both Spanish and German. There was a shift in the Argentine culture towards Italian and German customs, and also their political ideology. Please keep that in mind. But culturally, there became a focus on the creation of German bratwurst, Italians making cold cuts, all sorts of different meat-related things, and then other things like music, art, dance. Greater dishes outside of just meat became a huge part of Argentinian culture as well because it was shaped by these European. And at the same time, the power of Argentina shifted towards the middle and working class because of how significant those groups were for the economy. Because of this, new political parties formed in order to better represent the large population of Argentina. One of the most significant political parties that formed was the Radical Civic Union, or UCR. This party and many of its supporters helped Argentina gain universal adult suffrage, secret ballots, and other voting rights. Many labor unions began to form and started their own political parties. Socialist parties became very prominent. As the 1920s and the Great Depression rolled past, there began a shift in Argentina. Labor unions, socialists, business owners, and other parts of the working class all wanted the government to better represent them so that they could further their standing in life. And all this political back and forth led to Argentina itself adopting a new mindset with politics. And this is what it was. World War II not only had a significant effect on the Eastern Hemisphere, but actually directly affected Argentina. The large European population in Argentina actually supported the idea of an alliance with the Axis powers. This idea came mainly from the German population, which actually had many German military commanders within it. The desire for this was so strong that German commanders and officers living in Argentina actually founded the Group of United Officers. This was a political unit that was military trained and wanted to take power. In 1943, the military party actually took power in Argentina and hopes to establish an alliance with Nazi Germany. This German-led military takeover was actually ousted by another military takeover. As World War II came to an end, this party that was in power was pushed out in 1945. One of the most significant figures in this military junta taking power was Juan Domingo Perón. He was a colonel that rose through the ranks of the military government in Argentina and would go on to influence Argentina for the rest of its history. He eventually became the Minister of Labor and used this position to heavily change the lives of the working class. He guaranteed many rights and protections for laborers, improved safety codes, got a legalized minimum wage, and maximum work hours legislation. He became wildly supported by the working class and the middle class as well. He was considered a champion of labor, but that made him a problem for the government. The government in power saw him as a threat and actually ordered his arrest and removal from the government. This occurred in early October 1945. Within just a few days, the capital had been swarmed. Thousands upon thousands of laborers, union members, and other working-class citizens pounced on the capital to protest the indoctrination of Perón. Because of the massive protests, Perón was released. On October 17, 1945, he came out on the president's balcony and gave a riveting speech that motivated his people. Perón claimed victory and highlighted just how powerful the working class of Argentina was. Just a few minutes later, he was elected president. His stark focus on social welfare and upholding the working class, while also balancing a stabilized financial system, became its own political ideology. This ideology is today known as Peronism, and would continue to play a role in Argentine politics to this very day. As president, one of the nastier things that Perón was a part of was the rat lines. Perón was architect and the main proprietor behind the system that allowed the fascist and Nazi party members to escape Europe and find refuge in Argentina. Perón created the General Confederation of Labor Party to consolidate the power of his government. And it was also achievements I'm going to get into in a sec with this party, that this group also helped facilitate getting these Nazis and fascist people into Argentina to find refuge. And many of them were able to actually avoid the Nuremberg trials because of all this. So, nonetheless, in the early part of Perón's presidency, his first goal was to lift the working class up into a powerful position in the government. This goal was significantly assisted by his wife, Eva Evita Perón. She quickly became a champion for the working class. She told stories of her actual uprising that came from humble beginnings as the daughter of a working class family in a small town. She acted as the great communicator between the working class and President Perón. She was directly involved in the allocation of social welfare funds to the working and impoverished class. Despite the great successes, Perón's presidency did have its major connotations. Perón's administration was extremely restrictive of protest and the press. Political parties were widely repressed or completely disbanded if they challenged Perón. Perón was frequently called a modern-day caudillo leader because he strong-armed the government and population to act exactly as he wanted them to. Nonetheless, during the Perón project period from 1946 to 1949, there was vast amounts of improvement in Argentina. Quality of life was rapidly increased because working and middle-class wages were brought up, and there was a lot of resistance from the upper class that feared their profits would be cut too small. However, they actually remained pretty strong, just like the rest of the country's economy did. Evita Perón died of cancer in 1952, and it seemed that this was one of the major points where Perón began to slip into madness. For the next 3 years, Perón tightened his grip on the country in an attempt to hold power. The economy began to decline because of how expensive all of the social welfare and other programs were for Argentina to uphold. And that continues to be a problem throughout the rest of Argentinian history. It tries to hold up this welfare state and use the government resources to push back into the people, but the expansiveness of these programs does end up causing a lot of economic strife, both at this point in the 1950s and for the next few decades as well. In 1955, there was a widespread resistance against Perón, which manifested into a military coup attempt. General Eduardo Lunardi led a military group that was backed by not only most of the military, but also by the Catholic Church and its supporters. The Plaza de Mayo was bombed by the incoming force and 300 civilians were killed. Pressure rapidly fell on Perón and he fled to Spain in exile. This was known as the Liberating Revolution, or was at least called that by those that supported it. From 1955 to 1973, despite the goal of the new government to increase stability and representation in the Argentinian system, there was widespread instability and constant undemocratic changes of power. For these 18 years, there were assassination attempts, coups, and many other acts of instability across the nation. The economy and the stability of politics got so bad that Perón was actually asked to return to the country in order to stabilize it. The day that Perón was set to return to the government, a massacre happened at a major airport. It was between left-leaning Peronists and right-leaning Peronists who had a shootout. 13 people died and over 100 were injured. And despite him retaking power, Perón suddenly died in 1974. Before he died, he had already remarried his new wife, Isabel Isabelita Perón, who was not at all as well received as his first wife. Once Perón died, the government was left in the hands of Isabelita. Roughly 2 years of instability followed the death of Perón, and the military decided to oust Isabelita in a coup. Once the military rule was established, it became very clear to the Argentinian people that the system had failed. The cult of personality established around Perón died with Evita. So people wanted change. Jorge Videla led the coup and took power as dictator. However, this period would be defined as the Dirty War. The Dirty War was not an actual conflict, but a term given to the militaristic abuse of the government. The military killed or exiled between 10 and 30,000 people seen as enemies of the state in the national reorganization process. Since this point, there have been many investigations done into what happened to these people. Now, the process itself was funded, armed, and supported by the United States that feared the rise of not only communism, but also the legacy of Perón and his social welfare-based ideas. So, just like always with the Western world, there's some way that the U.S. stuck its nose in it. The way that, you know, with the rest of the world, Britain is always the problem, the U.S. tends to be part of the problem at some point in almost every country's history on this side of the hemisphere. So, we'll take blame for that one. Of course, the U.S. also had the interest of installing a government that would help facilitate American trade and commerce across Argentina. But outside of this, many other atrocities were alleged by the people because there was so many cases of torture and more. One of the nastiest parts of this was that around 400 babies were born while their mother was in custody of the government. Every single one of these mothers was subsequently killed once their child was born. After the mothers were killed, their children were either forcibly adopted into a prominent military family or sold onto the black market. All of this was done based on the accusation that they may be enemies of the state. All of this abuse led to the rise in resistance of different groups across the nation, but because of the strong government crackdown, there was not a lot of success. One of the very few success stories of the time was the Mothers of the Plaza de Mayo. This was a political group made up of mothers who lost their children due to the shady government dealings in some fashion. These women would wear white scarves and march around the heart of Buenos Aires holding pictures of the children that they had lost. Some of these children had died, and some of them were missing, never to be found. The chilling images of missing children drew empathy from a lot of Argentina's population. The military junta tried to suppress these women by kidnapping or killing prominent leaders of the group, but the movement still raged on no matter how many women, quote-unquote, disappeared. The lack of success and complete instability brought by military rule erased the economic success of Argentina during the Perón period. Support of the citizens continued to dwindle until there was a strong opposition against the government. In a desperate attempt to distract and unite the people, President Leopoldo Galtieri decided to invade the Falkland Islands. The Falklands War was fought in 1982. Argentinian forces invaded with the hope that Britain would be too distracted with the decolonization efforts they were having globally to defend this small rocky island chain. They were very, very wrong in this prediction. The hope to rally and motivate the Argentinian people completely backfired when the British gained victory in just 2 months. The military lost all support in the nation, and the shift towards democracy loomed on the horizon. Galtieri was removed from office for his failure to win the war that he started. And then, steps towards democracy were finally taken, when Raúl Alfonsín won the first free and uncontested election in Argentina's history. Raúl was president from 1983 to 1989. He persecuted leaders of the military junta for their crimes during the previous period. This was successful through 1985, but when Raúl and the government tried to pursue more and more low-ranking commanders, they found no success. In 1987 and 1988, there were military uprisings against the president, which caused the process of persecution against the joint military members to be halted permanently. The instability across Argentina for the last decade, and then some, made foreign investment very rare. That, among many other factors, caused the economy of Argentina to continue its decline while inflation rapidly increased. Raúl Alfonsín actually resigned because of the economic issues. The GDP of the nation plummeted, and external debt hit its highest point in history. Carlos Menem became president in 1989. He made vast economic reforms, and he pivoted the country towards foreign capital investment, privatization of many state-owned industries, and a huge focus on free trade. All of this causes the economy to completely turn itself around and start a look towards improvement. He also combated inflation by tying the Argentinian peso to the American dollar. However, the dark side of this was the increase in foreign investment and foreign operation, which made the cost of living and working in Argentina to increase. Foreign companies pushed local Argentinian ones out of the economy because they couldn't afford to compete. Millions of Argentinians would fall into a lower economic class, and thousands would become unemployed. Despite the early success of the Menem presidency, he faced an extremely low approval rating towards the end of his rule. Fernando de la Rúa won the election in 1999 because he ran on a platform that would be completely opposite of Carlos Menem, and it appealed heavily to most citizens. Despite the best efforts of La Rúa, the economy did not improve and poverty widely increased. The issue was that at the time, the tie between the Argentinian peso and the American dollar made purchases using the peso irrelevant compared to the strength of the American dollar. This meant that there was a lot of foreign investment coming into the Argentinian economy and that it became continuously hard for Argentinian companies to compete with the new foreign ones. The continued economic struggle caused widespread unrest in 2001 and 2002, which caused the link between the American dollar and the peso to be broken. The end of this bond actually caused heavy inflation since the Argentinian peso was now more unstable. Political instability followed this as multiple presidential elections would last only a week and instability would push out the head of state. Nestor Kirchner won a much more stable election in 2003 to become the president. Before becoming president, he was a governor of a small Patagonian province, but he won because of his staunch claims that Argentina and its economy would come first. Upon becoming president, he proved his words to be true when he informed the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, that the Argentinian well-being and economic health mattered more than paying off financial debt to any international organization. Kirchner was able to stabilize the economy because Argentine industries recovered with the end of the American dollar bond. Like a true Peronist, Kirchner enacted a lot of social welfare acts in order to pull his people out of a dark place economically. He also reopened the trials of the military leaders from the last military junta so that justice could be brought across Argentina. In 2007, Kirchner actually stepped away from the presidency so that his wife, Cristina Fernandez, could take up the mantle of president. She won the presidency in 2007, and it seemed like all things were lining up for the Kirchner government to stay in power. Because the plan was that after Fernandez's run, Kirchner would run again in 2011. However, this plan was derailed when Nestor Kirchner actually passed away from a heart attack in 2010. So this was extremely shocking due to the plan that was in place. Cristina Fernandez won the election in 2011 very handedly, and she continued the economic policy started by her late husband, which became known as Kirchnerismo. Fernandez's second term was much less successful, because economic instability gripped the nation as inflation increased. Nonetheless, things were much better than before, so Fernandez attempted to change the constitution so she could run for a third term. The people of Argentina resisted this and actually elected Mauricio Macri in 2015. Macri was a prominent businessman that had made waves in the nation for his platform based on economic stability through a business system. He was also the mayor of Buenos Aires. All of Macri's plans to shift the economy didn't work because of the economic instability and rising global prices, so he did not win re-election. Alberto Fernandez, who was actually not at all related to Cristina Fernandez, chose her as his vice president and was elected in 2019. She brought a lot of political baggage to the presidency because of how horrible her presidency ended. The outbreak of COVID and the widespread lockdown that occurred in response to the slowdown of the economy made it very hard to get out of the economic struggle. However, once the restrictions around COVID began to end around the start of 2022, Argentina was able to burst back into the global market and move towards economic stability and growth. And I do want to acknowledge something right now, and that is Black Argentina. So since 2013, November 8th has been celebrated as the National Day of Afro-Argentines and African culture in Argentina. The date was chosen to commemorate the date that Maria Remedios passed away, and as I said before, she was a part of the army that fought in the north for independence. And this comes into a stark contrast to the entire history of Argentina up to that point. Many scholars have a bone to pick with Argentina and its celebration of blackness when it has been a nation that has been so abusive of blackness. I'm going to explain to you that side of the story and give you some evidence for that. Despite Argentina being one of the main locations that black people were enslaved and shipped to during the Atlantic slave trade, black history in Argentina is very hard to find. This was done by design. Argentina always thought to distinct itself from the rest of Latin America, which in and itself had a significant black population across both South America and the Caribbean. Black people who were forcibly enslaved were a huge part of the construction of Buenos Aires and the development of Argentina up until 1853, when slavery was ended in the country. But since then, Argentina has taken very intentional steps towards de-Africanizing the nation. The census stopped recording the amount of black people in the nation in the early 1800s, and other measures were taken to prevent the expansion of black life. It was much harder for black people to get jobs, find housing, get loans for housing, and get education. Unlike the US, none of these things were made into legal doctrines like they were with the Jim Crow period, but they nonetheless still had a great effect on the black community of Argentina. In just over 100 years, the prominent black demographics of Argentina, which were once one-third of the population, were rapidly reduced. Feats of invention, victory, education, and more were erased from the history books if they were done by black people. Argentina was heart set on becoming a European-based nation. And with that population I mentioned earlier, which was one-third black, today, Argentina is 40 million strong. And out of that number, only 0.37% of it is black. Nonetheless, this is a very stark change compared to what the demographics looked like in its early parts of history. Argentina's government wanted to be a white nation, and that is clearly still the case. President Alberto Fernandez actually had a comment about this. He said, "The Mexicans came from the Indians, the Brazilians came from the jungle, but we Argentines came from the ships, and they were ships that came from Europe." It is very clear that the racial distinction is still very prominent in Argentina, and it takes a lot of pride in being the whitest nation in the world outside of Europe, because even the United States of America are both more black or indigenous mixed than Argentina is. Despite this, Argentina still has 148,000 black people living within its borders. These people hold tightly onto their culture and refuse to let it go. The influence of black people in Argentina can not only be seen in the infrastructure that they helped build and design, but also in the clothing, dances, food, music, and the culture itself that defines the nation. So with that being said, that gets us to the present. As I record this in early 2024, Javier Milei has become president of Argentina in an election that ended 2023. His economist background helps give hope to the Argentinian population that more stability for the economy will come and that growth will continue. However, the current status of Argentina is as follows. Argentina is considered very highly developed by the Human Development Index and is considered one of the best democracies in Latin America. Argentina has the third largest economy in Latin America as well. Issues over government corruption have continually played out in the nation for the last 20 years, but it is very clear that elections now happen without any common issues. The complicated racial history of Argentina still rears its ugly head today, but there are much more efforts towards diversification and acceptance of change. Argentina has been a champion for people's rights, continuously expanding rights to the LGBTQ and minority religious communities throughout the past decade. Despite its bigoted and Nazi-sympathizing past, Argentina has become one of the most accepting and strong democratic nations in the Western Hemisphere, through the different shared experiences of over 40 million people. The nation presents a culture that has been developed over hundreds of years through the different shared experiences of over 40 million people. Argentina has given the world beautiful dances like tango, incredible meals like asada, and one of the most beautiful capital cities in the entire planet. And with all that, that gets us to the end. And when I get to the end, I always like to do a takeaway or a mindset from the history. And with the history of Argentina, that takeaway slash mindset is going to be: embrace the different aspects of who you are. Be that culture, be that hobbies, be that past, or be it habits. I say that with Argentina because of the colorful history of this nation. Argentina today is extremely based in European immigration in a major part of its population, but the development of the nation would not have happened without black people and black culture. We have seen the influence of Italian, German, Spaniard culture here, and its own South American culture because of the landscape and all sorts of things that shaped the history. Now, that has continued to define Argentina, both the races, the religions, the location, the different immigrants that have come in, all of that has shaped into the Argentine culture. And the way history is folded out for this country, all of that comes back to the diversity of this nation and the different things that have made this nation what it is and the people who built it. So I say with that, the thing to take away is that a lot of different cultures and aspects make up who you are, and you need to accept all of them. And I know with Argentina, I'm saying that in the sense of literal cultures, black culture, white culture, Italian, German culture, Hispanic culture, Spaniard culture, all sorts of things like that. But I also mean in the sense of like the culture of who you are. If you're hardworking, if you're a gym freak, if you're artistic, if you're creative, all sorts of things like that. Those different sides of you, those different interests and hobbies make up who you are. And with Argentina, this nation has developed over hundreds of years to become a nation that kind of represents all of it. It now finally, after centuries, celebrates its black people that helped develop the culture. And despite being in South America, has a deep connection to Italian, Spanish, and German culture as well. And all of these things form Argentina into not only the country it is, but the way it has solved problems and pursued itself economically and in politics. So with you, take a look at all the different things that make you who you are and embrace them all. Embrace that the creativity might help you in your career. The hardworkingness might help you in all aspects. That your confidence and extrovertedness might help you in one area but hurt you in another. Just accept who you are and accept all the pieces of you that make up your culture and embody it so you can become the best version of yourself, the same way Argentina is trying to do today. And that's going to be all for me. Listen, Argentina is a beautiful country. As you can see, I did a lot of history here. Definitely one of my longer ones. And it should be. Argentina has been inhabited for a long time. We've been able to place down different people groups and understand the developments that have came from each and every one of them throughout history. And now we have the Argentina we do today. So I'm very glad you guys are here. I'm very glad you guys gave this one a shout. And that's going to be all. I hope you got something out of it. But most of all, thank you for watching. So, with all that being said, my name is Reese Karlinski. This is Young History. And that was Argentina. Hope you guys have a good one.